This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of January the 7th, 2019. I'm Mason King. Indiana lawmakers kicked off their four-month General Assembly on Thursday, and it's a biannual budget writing year. So imagine, if you will, 150 legislators trying to get their hands on the state's purse strings all at once to either tighten or loosen them. And it wouldn't be a legislative session without lawmakers trying to rejigger the rules for casinos and gaming. But this year could bring some truly tectonic changes. The big issue is sports betting. The U.S. Supreme Court gave states the ability to legalize it last year, so you no longer need to go to Vegas to bet on your favorite football, basketball, or baseball teams, at least if you want to keep it legal. And lawmakers also will look at allowing the two Majestic Star Casino licenses in Gary to relocate from the Buffington Harbor area, with one potentially leaving the region altogether for another spot. That's a lot to digest. So with me again in the studio is IBJ's politics reporter, Lindsay Aridoti. Lindsay, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
May I say also Happy General Assembly?
Looking forward to it.
It's only 4 months left. Let's start with the sports betting, which seems like a huge shift to me for a state that is often skittish about gambling in general, not to mention where people do it and what they're allowed to wager on. And if you'd asked my 25-year-old self whether this is a good idea, he would have said, man, this is amazing. Because when I was young and stupid, I seriously considered moving to Las Vegas to earn a living betting on NBA games. And there was no way you'd ever be able to do that in Indiana. So what happened?
Well, like you mentioned, it started with the Supreme Court ruling in May that struck down a federal law that limited gambling on sports like basketball, football, baseball, whatnot, to only in Nevada. So that law, that federal law is gone, kind of opened the door for any other state now. And to be fair, other states, including Indiana, had already been waiting for this ruling. They kind of saw the writing on the wall, if you will, and we're kind of getting ready for it, even in the past few years. So this had come up in the previous session and to some extent in a few years prior to that, although it never really gained much traction because there was this federal law that prohibited everything. So that's kind of how we got to here. And before that Supreme Court ruling came down, the lawmakers had already decided that this was something they were going to talk about more in the summer study committees. They met in October and discussed this, and the committee sent a recommendation to the full General Assembly that said that the state should look at passing some sort of bill that would allow sports wagering. The hang-up in the committee was in the details in terms of, well, how do you regulate it? What's allowed and what's not allowed? And all of those little details, they said, you discuss that when the session starts.
Okay. So I gather there are two bills that have been proposed so far?
Yes. We will have a bill in the House from Representative Alan Morrison, and we will have a bill in the Senate from Senator John Ford, both Republicans, both kind of from the Terre Haute area.
Are the bills essentially the same, or are they wildly different? Why are there two bills?
They had both had bills in the last session, and so it's kind of why they're bringing them up again. They are very similar. The big difference is probably in terms of mobile sports betting, which I think we'll get into more here in a bit. But Senator Ford's bill would require someone who wanted to bet on their phone to go to a casino or an off-track betting facility first to sign up and create an account and, you know, prove you're of gambling age. And Representative Morrison's bill does not require that in-person step. He believes that there are other ways, other security measures you can put in place to prove that you're 21 and you're in Indiana.
Okay. This is good. Let's focus on that.
Yeah.
So what would this look like in practice? I assume that Indiana casinos would be able to have a sports book.
Yes. So, again, this is all going to be debated this session in terms of how it actually works and where it's allowed and all of those nitty-gritty details. But for the most part, yeah, it would be, you'd be at a casino. You could go place a bet on an NBA game or NFL game.
Would there be sportsbook facilities in every city? Is that a possibility? Like OTBs, off-track betting parlors?
I don't think so. I think one of the big debates here for some lawmakers is going to hinge on whether this is an expansion of gaming, and I think that would be a huge expansion of gaming. So I think you're just going to be looking at your existing casinos and OTBs and then the mobile part of it.
Yeah, well, the mobile part sounds like a huge expansion if I can do it from my couch.
Some people would say it's not an expansion. It's just a modernization of gambling in Indiana. Other people would say it's an expansion. With the mobile side of it, though, the proponents of sports betting overall have argued that if you don't include mobile sports betting, then there's really no point in having sports betting. Right. Because a lot of people right now, in terms of all the illegal sports betting that's going on or believed to be going on, it's hard to track, is, you know, happening with somebody sitting on their couch, on their phone, placing a game or placing a bet, excuse me, on an NFL game or something like that. And the argument is that person, just because it's now legal, isn't going to be motivated to go to the casino or the off-track betting facility to place that bet. They're still just going to want to sit there and do it on their phone. So you're not going to get rid of that black market that people believe is pretty huge in the state and in the country, really.
Yeah. So as I say, you have to meet them where they live.
Right, right. And I mean, it's a convenience factor. We do everything on our phones these days, so...
Would I just be able to bet on the major pro leagues, or could I bet on college? I mean, is this going to turn into a bonanza during March Madness?
That's another thing that came up in the summer study committee in terms of what do you allow the betting on? And I think that will certainly come up in the session as these bills are debated. My understanding, I think what you would probably end up seeing is yes to the professional leagues and yes to the college sports. But what you won't see is, like, betting on high school games.
If there was any state where people actually would create a line for a high school basketball game, I think it would be Indiana. So what's the benefit? Do we have a sense of how much tax and fee revenue sports betting could generate for the state?
Yeah, so the Indiana Gaming Commission had a study done leading up to this committee meeting in October. And it showed that the total over 5 years in terms of direct tax revenue to the state would be roughly $150 million. But you also have the overall economic impact of it, which would reach upwards of $465 million by the fifth year. And that would be annually in terms of total economic input to the state. So it's depends on how you look at it. And some lawmakers and proponents have said, you know, don't get too excited about this being a huge tax windfall for the state, because I don't think anybody wants to look at it in terms of, well, we should approve this just because of the tax revenue.
Now, for comparison purposes, how much does the state receive each year, say, from the Hoosier Lottery?
From the Hoosier Lottery, in this past year, the state received about $306 million. I think it's also worth looking at a comparison to how much the state receives from the casinos right now. And that's just over $600 million in taxes that go to the state and local governments. That's not all necessarily going to the state.
So the sports betting side of it, I mean, it's not really comparable. It's a
it's
nice chunk.
It's not huge.
Yeah,
you know, no.
I could pay for a big highway interchange.
Yeah, I mean, looking at that study, you know, the first year, the total state tax revenue would only be $10 million. That grows to about $38 million in the fifth year. So it's not huge, but you're also talking about a state where the budget's going to be really tight for the next 2 years, and lawmakers are already kind of scrambling in terms of, well, how do you cover the needs at the Department of Child Services and plus the Medicaid increases and funding pensions, and they're basically already out of money and they haven't even increased pay to teachers. So I think, yeah. You know, it's not a lot of money, but the state's looking at all ways it can increase revenue, I think.
Now, have the Pacers or the Colts weighed in on what they think about this?
Yes and no. The Colts are definitely watching it and have said that as much publicly. For them, it's going to come down to the details of it in terms of whether or not they support it. They would like a royalty or an integrity fee to be built into it, and they would also like official league data to be required to be used in terms of determining whether or not a bet was good or not. The Pacers have not said anything. So In terms of that royalty fee, neither bill from Representative Morrison or Senator Ford include that right now. And that essentially means, you know, the leagues like the NFL and the NBA getting a cut of these bets. The Casino Association is also against this royalty fee because that means...
Indiana Casino Association.
Yes, the Casino Association of Indiana. They're also against it because that's less money that's going to be given to the casinos. And lawmakers right now have kind of said they don't really see the reasoning why the leagues need that money. The leagues, at least in specific, the NBA was at that committee meeting in October and said that they would need it for like integrity training, you know, to make sure that coaches and players are aware of what they're allowed and not allowed to do. On the other side of it, Representative Morrison in particular has argued that just by allowing sports betting legally, it will increase how many people are paying attention to games. Mm. Because, for instance, you might not necessarily be a Colts fan, but you placed a $20 bet on a Colts game. So now all of a sudden you care about that game and you're going to be watching and paying attention to it.
I guess in a way it's kind of like fantasy sports. I mean, they probably saw a lot more eyes because people became suddenly interested in what a quarterback for Cleveland does just because they're on his team.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And in terms of the official league data, in Representative Morrison's bill, it does require that league data be used for in-game betting, which basically means, you know, it's the middle of a game and I bet that the Colts are going to score a touchdown in the third quarter, but it's, you know, the second quarter when I place that bet. The touchdown obviously is an easy one. It happened or it didn't. I think when you get down to some of the more detailed bets that could be placed in terms of, like, you know, how many yards someone ran for or different things like that, I think it becomes more and more important to the leagues, at least, that their data be used.
So a lot of sticking points.
Oh, yes.
Governor Holcomb is in general amenable to something like this?
He's certainly open-minded to it. I spoke to him just before Christmas about this, and he's interested to see what lawmakers end up deciding. He's not really taking a heavy position one way or the other right now. And the one thing he did say is that, you know, he's concerned about making sure the integrity of the sport is maintained. He doesn't want games being thrown or whatnot because of allowing sports betting in the state. Sure. So
now I know it's virtually impossible to tell what's going to happen to a bill, even when we're like 3/4 of the way through the session. But Indiana lawmakers are notoriously slow to make big changes, especially to stuff like this. Is there any reason to think that this could happen this year, or can we safely assume it's going to head into another study session?
I think one of the things that is going to help give it some momentum this year, obviously, you do have that Supreme Court ruling now, so that's taken care of. And that opens the door for all the other states. And every neighboring state to Indiana is considering the same thing. Yeah. We're going to lose out on that revenue, even though it's not that much. We're losing out on it.
With the time we have left, I want to quickly look at the situation with the Majestic Star Casinos in Gary. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is that city officials would like to get them out of Buffington Harbor, which is on Lake Michigan. Now, why is that?
The officials in Gary see an opportunity to have more of like a logistics and transportation hub on that harbor. You've already kind of got all of this manufacturing and logistics, all these companies already there. So the casinos to the officials in Gary are kind of out of place as it is. And they're difficult to get to right now. And so in Gary, they would like to move at least one of them over to the 80-94 corridor, which has way more traffic. It's about 300,000 vehicles every day. And they see that as a huge opportunity to grab people who are traveling leisurely from Michigan to Illinois or just passing through Indiana and have time to stop and have fun at the casino. And then doing that allows them to have more economic development in Buffington Harbor. So they kind of see it as a win-win on both sides. They have a casino that's doing better, and they're getting more use out of their harbor. because the casinos right now, both the Majestic Star casinos, are among the lowest in the state in terms of total win.
And this isn't a decision that the legislature would take lightly, right? I mean, aren't lawmakers incredibly particular about where casinos are located?
Yeah, they have never allowed an already open and already operating casino to relocate to another city. And I think one thing everyone's going to be very cautious of is the ripple effect of moving one or both of those casinos in terms of how it impacts all the other casinos. So especially when you talk about potentially moving one of those licenses to another city in the state, they're really going to look at what that's going to mean, not only for that community it could move to, but what it could mean for all the other casinos.
So yeah, so the one casino license potentially could move to the 80-94 corridor.
Mm-hmm.
But the other could just migrate out into the state. And I think Terre Haute has been mentioned as a potential possibility.
Yes. Terre Haute's been brought up in the past in terms of trying to get a casino license. Some people see it as a good opportunity to pull some business in from Illinois because there's not really a casino over in that area right now. And one of the, I guess we should back up a little bit, the Majestic Casinos are in the process of getting a new owner, Spectacle Entertainment, which is run by some of the former executives of Centaur, if everyone recalls Centaur, which got bought by Caesars. Everyone's right. Doing a little map in their head of how this all works.
Yeah. And Centaur owned the Racinos, is that right?
Yes.
The ones in Anderson and Shelbyville.
Yes. So same people that were behind that company have formed a new company, Spectacle Entertainment, that is trying to acquire the two casinos in Gary. And they have said they would like to relocate both licenses, although one would stay in Gary and one would go elsewhere. And while they're not specifying any particular city in the state, one of their principal investors is an entrepreneur from Terre Haute. So all signs kind of point to Terre Haute being a logical choice for it. Senator Ford is advocating for Terre Haute to be a spot for a casino. He has for years. This isn't new coming from him. So that does seem like an option, but that being said, hasn't happened in the past. Who knows?
And there was one thing that really struck me as interesting. So Gary currently has two casinos. They're fine with one moving. And it sounded like the mayor was also all right with the other just leaving.
Yes. I spoke with the mayor of Gary beginning of December about this. And she is definitely not okay with both casinos leaving. She made that clear. And she thinks that the conversation should start with Gary keeping both casinos, but she would be okay if one of the casinos left. I think part of that is a realization that Gary isn't going to support two casinos. Even moving the casino license, they're better off just having the one casino license and bringing in revenue from that.
Is there any chance that this issue will be resolved this year?
I think this one, again, has a little bit more momentum than it has in previous years, because, again, this is not new. I mean, people in Gary have been talking about this for a long time. I think it has more potential because of the new owners or new potential owners of Majestic Star kind of advocating for this. That being said, it could be a really tough one.
Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
My thanks again to Lindsay, who we'll hear a lot more from as the session evolves. Now, before you get on with your week, I wanted to draw your attention to a few more stories in this week's edition of the IBJ. Reporter Haley Colombo explains how the Eastern Star Church on Indianapolis's Far East Side is building low-cost homes, apartments, and retail space to serve the residents of Marion County's most poverty-stricken zip code. Also in this week's issue, Sam Quinn details the explosive growth of downtown Fishers. You'll recall that 5 years ago, the Nickel Plate District was essentially just an idea pitched by then-town manager Scott Fadness. And today, close to $100 million of commercial and apartment buildings are in the ground, with twice that investment still on the way. And continuing with our theme here of urban renewal, Susan Orr has the scoop on plans to transform part of Riverside Park in Indianapolis into a 650-seat amphitheater that will become home for the Indianapolis Shakespeare Company. Now, you can read all of these stories in IBJ's print edition, which you undoubtedly have delivered to your home every week, or at IBJ.com. Folks, for complete, unfettered access to our award-winning content, just click the subscribe button. As always, thanks for checking out the podcast. I'm Mason King. I hope you're off to a great start in the new year, and we'll be back next week.